Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Have we overstated a sophomore slump for one C.J. Stroud? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Todd the Show says, no, I don't think we have. I don't think we've gone far enough, says Todd the Show. Todd the Show likes to be contrarian. He likes to be anti
Jalen Green.
Anti-Texans. Yeah. No, he hates Jalen Green.
Yeah, he loves
I know
CJ.
You're being sarcastic, but the listener doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So where do you stand? Do you think we've gone too far? Not like you and I, but just in the city of Houston, blowhards on the radio, which includes us, journal, whatever. Do you think that we went too far universally in the city with the talk of regression in a sophomore slump when it comes to C.J. Stroud?
I realistically think that there has been too many people that are ready to, like, jump off the C.J. train because of this season. I think that there have been people, you know, his mom got involved because of all the criticism he was getting. Look, understandably, this team is not doing what it did a year ago, but the expectations were, the bar was set higher. People had higher expectations for this team. The schedule was tougher, but yet, you know, they haven't played great football all year, as we just got done talking about. I mean, statistically, you cannot look at the stats and say that he's not playing less than he played last year, but each season is its own chapter in a guy's career. And I think that as well as things went a year ago and a lot of, you know, bounces went his way, his picks were way down. He could have had more interceptions than he had, but he had one hell of a year. And this year, that offensive line has caused him so much disdain in terms of, not disdain, but so much in terms of his internal clock, creating a more rushed pocket and all the decisions that he makes, that I think that that's been extremely impactful. And I think that that's had a trickle-down effect on the rest of his game. I think he's still a really, really, really good quarterback in this league. But if you want to call it a sophomore slump because his stats aren't going to be what they were a year ago, I understand where you're coming from. But just don't jump off the train and say that he's not a good quarterback.
Yeah, see, I think we have gone a bit too far. I haven't seen anybody quit on C.J. Stroud in the sense that they're jumping off the C.J. Stroud train. Like, maybe I'm wrong there. 713-780-ESPN. If you have jumped off the C.J. Stroud train, tell us why. Other than Todd the Show and maybe King of Twitch, I don't use them as credible sources, credible people. I don't know how you could jump off the C.J. Stroud train in terms of, like, what you expect from him in the future. Could he have regressed from this year to last – from this year to last year? Sure. I mean, the numbers would tell you that. I don't think he's a lesser player, though. He had a phenomenal rookie year. Some people call it the best rookie season for a quarterback ever, quite frankly. So he did set that bar pretty high. But if you, like – let's take out the middle of – C.J. Stroud's career. If you go to the moment that the Houston Texans drafted C.J. Stroud at number 2 to right now, and you eliminate everything else in the middle, would you be happy with what you have the quarterback that you drafted at number 2?
I would, personally.
I think everybody would. I think it'd be unanimous.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would even bat an
say,
eye.
You know he can play in the league and everything like that. You just don't have the stats.
No, let's say you went into a coma. You went into a coma the day after C.J. Stroud was drafted. And then all of a sudden you woke up today and you do this crash course on where C.J. Stroud currently is at in the NFL. You'd be over the moon with what C.J. Stroud is. Now, we probably went too far on where we thought C.J. Stroud should be after his rookie year. Like, we probably overrated his rookie season in total. Like, we jumped in and put C.J. Stroud as a top 5 quarterback. Okay, we probably overreacted there. He's probably not top 5 yet. I believe he will be top 5 someday again, but he probably isn't top 5 yet. But then if you're taking him out of your top 10, I think now you've gone too far. I still think he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. I still think he's a quarterback that is capable of winning a Super Bowl. I think you can win a Super Bowl with C.J. Stroud, and quite frankly, that's the only question I care about whenever I'm talking about a quarterback. If I have a quarterback here, quarterback there, quarterback over there, the question I'm asking myself, can I win a Super Bowl with that guy? If I can win a Super Bowl with that guy, I'm going to be highly interested in having that guy. So that opinion of C.J. Stroud hasn't changed for me. I believe after his rookie year, you can win a quarterback someday with C.J. Stroud. I believe currently, today, you can win a Super Bowl with C.J. Stroud. And his numbers haven't been awful.
No.
Have they been bad? Not even bad. Are they lesser than his rookie season?
Thing.
Yes, they are lesser than his rookie season. Are they deplorable? Are they awful? Are they bottom half of the NFL? No. I think you could still make a very good case. He's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and he would be top 10 for me.
And he's top 10 for me. I guess I don't want to say easily, but looking at it, that's why I said every quarterback goes through every season as another chapter in their career. And you can be on the high of all highs and play an unbelievable season. And the next season, you can look at whether it's the pitfalls of the team period with Joe Burrow and coming off an injury. But yet, lately, he's been picking it back up again. Dak Prescott, a guy that, has unbelievable regular seasons, and they have just completely crapped the bed, and then he got hurt. So you can look at it and say, does that mean that there's a lesser quarterback for his career or going forward or for next season? Everybody's their own case study, but when you look at C.J. Stroud and you watch play after play, week after week, you realize all the throws that he still makes and all of his ability to kind of move and read the pocket and do the things that a good quarterback does in this league. There's no reason for me to change my opinion that this is a guy that isn't one of the best premier quarterbacks, young quarterbacks in this league, and one of the best quarterbacks in this league, period.
Yeah, I don't love stats in football, quite frankly. I think they're highly misleading, and I think that a lot of things go into a certain player's stat. Quarterback alone, you're dependent on your offensive line, which I think is something that's a huge conversation when it comes to C.J. Stroud. You're dependent to your play caller. You're dependent to who your receivers are, all of these things. So I don't love looking at a quarterback stat line and being like, that guy's really good. I like to turn on the film. I like to turn on the tape and posture like I know football. Anytime I see C.J. Stroud,
like you're Jeremy Branham,
no,
trying to make everybody think that you know ball.
Yeah, that's what I like to do. I like to make everybody think I know ball by watching the film. For me, my eyes and watching what I see on tape matter than completion percentage or touchdown to interception ratio. And whenever I watch C.J. this year versus last year, I don't see a worse football player. All the highlights that C.J. Stroud was performing and making last year, he is still currently doing. I think his lows have been lower, though, for a variety of reasons. Like, he's been sacked way more than he was last year. He's currently been sacked 41 times in 13 games. Last year in 15 games, he was sacked 38 times. So the offensive line is a huge variable of why C.J. Stroud, I think, has the inconsistency is more prevalent. But people are like, oh, his completion percentage is awful. He was 63.9 last year. He's 63.3 right now. It's almost the exact same.
And you have to factor in the internal clock. As bad as that offensive line was in totality last year with all of the injuries and all the way they played musical chairs with him and the way they started the season giving up 11 sacks in the first two games, they put it together. They found continuity. They gave him enough time to where he had the success that he had. This year, he has been under fire on almost every snap. And at a certain point, that's going to affect everything that you do because you're constantly expecting to get hit yet again and sacked yet again. And that changes the mentality of a quarterback. It has to. It doesn't mean that it's going to change it like David Carr for the rest of his career. It just means that in this season, with as bad as this offensive line has been, he has regressed because of all that the extra coming at him on every play.
Yeah, it's tough when you argue with these people who want to die on the hill that he's having a sophomore slump because the stats are on their side. I mean, other than interception percentage, which is marginal at best, or completion percentage, that is. But interception percentage is up. Yards per game is down. The difference between his touchdowns and interceptions is down. All these things that they would point to are down, but you can't exclude away Nico missing five games. You can't exclude away Stephon Diggs getting hurt or Tank Dell disappearing or the offensive line being that bad. And I think overall, like going back to the beginning of the segment, if you didn't know what CJ did in his rookie year, this would be kind of the natural progression of a second-year quarterback. Like, guys coming in and playing like CJ did in year one isn't necessarily the norm. There's usually a slower progression building up. And I think if we didn't have the expectations falsely raised from how amazing he was last year, then we wouldn't be expecting this spike in performance, the spike in production, and look at these numbers in a negative way.
A few texts on this. 713-780-ESPN. Todd and King of Twitch are morons. That's not nice. Those are our guys. Don't be mean to don't be mean to Todd.
King of Twitch.
Don't give up on CJ. He's had a less than stellar offensive line. That's a major variable for a quarterback's production. And you look at the pressure rates between this year and last year. This year, very, very high. They kept him more upright last year. Tougher schedule. Not surprised. Maybe less podcast he does. Okay, the podcast thing is stupid. But the tougher schedule, that comes into play too. Like, you play more difficult opponents, what does that do to your stat line? If CJ Stroud played the worst team in the NFL each and every week, how would his numbers look versus playing the best defense in the NFL each and every week? Option A would obviously be way better in terms of production. I don't believe CJ is the savior. It sounds like after Watson, it sounds like Dallas after Dak. Okay, I'm not putting him in the Deshaun Watson conversation. The jury's out on the whole Dallas-Dak thing. Like, Dak hasn't done much in the postseason. CJ Stroud won a postseason game in his rookie season. But I can't put CJ Stroud as, like, a better resume than Dak Prescott right now. We have to wait.
Dak has been in the running for an MVP on multiple seasons because of the regular seasons that he's had. That's something that you can't take away from him. The playoffs, absolutely a separate conversation where, you know, what really matters most is what everybody is really going to watch the closest, and he hasn't performed in the playoffs.
Now, I would take Stroud over Dak, but I'm not going to sit here and argue resumes. Pessimistic Chad, so much of the issue with CJ is the result of an abominable offensive line. He doesn't trust them. I do think that is true. Like, his internal clock is different.
I've been harping on it. Everything, your run game, your receivers, your passing game, everything that you do offensively, it all connects and starts with your offensive line. And the offensive line has been putrid. It's been bad. It's not supposed to be this bad. We thought it was going to be way better than it has been, but it is the main crux of why they've struggled so greatly on offense across the board, not just CJ.
But we do have to see improvement there, because as we talked about after the game, I mean, Jeremy, I think, called it the best offensive line performance of the season.
Since the change.
Yeah, since the change. So, I think we noticed an improvement overall, and not just this last game, but overall since they made the change with Kenyon Green out and making the change at center as well. So I think if we're going to hold on to, well, it was the offensive line, then CJ would need to show a production improvement with the better offensive line to make that point even more, I guess, proven, for lack of a better word.
You just need more than a one-game sample.
Yeah,
it would have to be for the duration of the year.
But if you want to make the argument, it wasn't CJ, it was the offensive line, and the offensive line plays better, then CJ's production has to go up.
Agreed. You just need the series of games. And it's probably all the games after the bye. Not jumping off the CJ Stroud train, it's okay to acknowledge, though, that opposing defenses have adjusted well. So the opposing defenses countering CJ Stroud, or are they countering the poor offensive line and attacking that?
Yeah, they're capitalizing on the matchups, and that's what coaches do week in, week out. They see this offensive line. Look at what the Jets did. The Jets have been a piss poor team all season, but the Jets knew Quinnen Williams matched up against Kenyon Green was going to be a huge advantage, and they took advantage of it. They're supposed to.
Yeah, I think DCs are exposing the Texans O-line, not CJ Stroud's weaknesses per se. Has there ever been a quarterback that hasn't gone through a sophomore slump? I would say most quarterbacks are usually better in year two than they are year one, though. Like, you look at Peyton Manning, way better in year two.
Yeah, certainly
year
Mahomes.
One.
Year two, Mahomes, he had 50 touchdowns.
And he didn't play his rookie year.
Well, he played one game.
He was second-string quarterback. Texans O-line stealing money, tougher schedule, yards per game is down across the league. I do believe that is true. I think the kickoff rule plays a little part into that. But, yeah, I mean, if the yards per game is down across the league, then you can't look at C.J. Stroud's yards per game and be like, oh, well, look how bad he's regressed. I point more to the interceptions.
Well, and C.J. Stroud's last year, he led the league in yards per game. This year he's like 10th.
Fair.
So it's not just that the overall yards are down across the league, which they are, and that's part of the conversation, but also where he ranks against the rest of the league is down.
Yeah, that's a good point. Relative to the league is the best way to look at it, versus yards versus his rookie year. Another tougher schedule. You guys are currently in the denial and bargaining stages of the five stages of grief. The excuse making is crazy today. Okay. Another one, stop making excuses. There needs to be more quick throwing and play action passes. A lot of defenses.
That would be slow.
Keying on Mixon. That'd be slow. There's plenty of blame to go around. Offensive line, CJ decision making, but let's not forget the play calling as well. We mentioned that. Man, if the Texans never figure out this offensive line, what a waste of talent with CJ. Absolutely.
That's true.
That has to be priority number one. Not only this offseason, but every offseason that you have CJ. CJ can be better than Baker and Darnold. I hope so. I hope he can be better than Baker and Darnold. I would say he is better than Darnold.
And on the previous one, see Joe Burrow. That's what you do when you have an unbelievable talent at quarterback and you don't put the proper offensive line in front of him and then realize how you can screw that up. Yes, he did eventually get to a Super Bowl, but a lot of times the injuries he's had and the way that he has, you know, had struggles, it's due to his offensive line sucking too.
Here are a few other like advanced numbers that don't help CJ Stroud. He's first with 104 dropbacks on third and fourth down with 7+ yards to go. So they're putting him in bad spot. Third and longs, fourth and longs. He leads the NFL in third and fourth and longs more than anybody else in the league. He's quarterback number 6 in the Pro Football Focus grade, quarterback number 7 in big-time throw rate, quarterback 6 in turnover-worthy play rate, the good rate. He's avoiding turnover. Yet the Texans are 15th in success rate. That's OC. That's offensive line. Yes. It's not play from your quarterback. So I would point to that, too. That was from Hayden Winks that mentioned some of those advanced numbers. 713-780-ESPN. The Astros have an offer on Alex Bregman, according to Brian McTaggart. And to me, if it's according to Brian McTaggart, it is official. 6 years, $156 million. Are the Astros lowballing Alex Bregman? A lot of people think that's the case. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So Brian McTaggart has a report out today that the Astros have offered Alex Bregman a contract. The details of the contract: 6 years, $156 million. A lot of conversation going on Twitter right now. Do you think that the Astros lowballed Alex Bregman like they did once upon a time to Carlos Correa?
Not at all, because of the fact that reading an article on Bleacher Report this morning that was taking the top 10 free agents left on the market and trying to guess their final contract numbers, that's exactly what it was. 6 and 156. So I don't think that's a low ball. I think that we know that there are teams that are going to – I think, quite honestly, he's the plan B for a lot of teams. I don't know that he's a top priority for any team other than the Astros right now, but I think that based on what happens with Juan Soto and some of the pitchers in the market, it's going to dictate how much interest there's going to be in Alex Bregman, and with that interest is going to be competition to try and get the best offer in, and that's where the numbers might get inflated and exceed what the Astros are willing to pay. I don't think that's a lowball offer, because you don't want to make your best offer right now anyway.
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't think it's a lowball, to be fair. I don't like Bleacher Report. I don't think anybody that, like, I don't know anybody that works at Bleacher Report, but I usually don't find them all that credible. The Athletic has the projection for Alex Bregman, 7 years, $189 million. So higher than what he was offered, but I don't think that's huge, like a huge, massive leap. That's just one extra year, and now $33 million is significant, but it's pretty close to the AAV of 6 years, $156 million. So I don't think it's a low ball, but I don't think it's enough. I don't think that Alex Bregman's going to sign for 6 years, $156. And to go to the point that you brought up about will they improve their offer? I think that's how we're going to determine if the Astros are serious or not about Alex Bregman. Or are they just like putting on a face, be like, hey, look at us. Look at this contract offer that we're giving. Look at us. We're giving it the old college try. Look at us. We're really efforting for Alex Bregman. And then at the end of the day, Bregman signs for 6 years, $180 million, and they fall short of that. So let's see how serious they are. Is it their best and final? I don't know. I wouldn't say that it's an insulting low ball offer. But what I would point to is the Carlos Correa offer. That was a low ball, but they never improved on it. I would even point to James Click. They gave James Click a one-year deal to kind of save face. They weren't firing the general manager that just won the World Series, but had zero intention of bringing back James Click. So they had zero intention of bringing back James Click. They really had zero intention of bringing back Carlos Correa unless he signed a low ball offer. Let's see how serious Jim Crane and the Astros are if they're willing to go more for Alex Bregman. Because if this is their best and final, 6 years, 156, it ain't going to get it done.
No, there's the difference. I mean, when you're doing any kind of negotiating, you're not going to make your top offer right off the top of the negotiation process.
The Astros did, though, with Correa and with Click.
That's what they said, right? But I think to your point, and the point that I was going to kind of reiterate, is the fact that I don't think they would have made a six-year offer and made the kind of long-term massive offer that Correa already knew that he was going to be offered by somebody else out there. They just save face. I think by making the contract offer that they made with competitive AAV to start the process, but going to 6 years already, it shows that at least they're going to be more engaged in this negotiation than maybe they were in the others when they were just trying to save face. It feels like by going to 6 years and being pretty competitive to start the process going, they feel like they're going to have a little bit more of an urgency to try and get something done with Alex Bregman. Again,
I don't know if we know that.
I'm not saying we do know that definitively. It just looks like it from the standpoint of other offers I think they made, knowing damn well he wasn't going to accept them, and they were just trying to do what they needed to do.
But they know he's not going to accept this.
But I don't think in the past that they've shown with all their past history that they want to go to 6 years, and at least they're willing to go to 6 years. So at least from a Scott Boras perspective, okay, they're serious in negotiating with us if they're going to go to 6 years. Now let's talk about the dollar figure and see how far they're willing to go. And that's the scary part, because now, as I said, as other teams get involved in the mix and they want to get competitive with it, that's where I think they're going to the ceiling's going to be too high and the Astros aren't going to end up doing it.
Yeah, I think what happens from here lets us know how serious the Astros are. I don't think this is an insulting offer, but if it is their best and final offer, it is ultimately not going to get it done.
Right, and I think that's why it was surprising to me that if it was confirmed that this was their offer, then 6 years was surprising to me because I didn't think they'd ever want to go to that length years-wise, regardless of the money.
Yeah, they've only done it with Jordan, who was internal.
That was a steal.
Yeah, it was a steal. And then what did Altuve get this most recent time?
Five, I think.
I think it was a five-year deal. Now, the first contract, I can't remember. They offered Correa 5 years, 160, whenever he was a free agent, the first time he was a free agent, and got way more than that. But no one thinks that Alex Bregman's getting Carlos Correa money, not a single person on earth. So I think the jury's out in terms of where it goes. Now, $26 million per year is actually a pay cut for Alex Bregman. Bregman was making $20 million AAV, but remember he had escalators in the contract where he went from like 10, 11, 10, somewhere around there. And then the last 2 years, he was making $30.5 million. So if he does accept a six-year $156 million deal, his paychecks will actually go down than they were the last 2 years.
He doesn't have to until he sees what the other offers are. But for most people, you realize, hey, I'm willing to take a little less on the front side now, knowing that I'm probably going to give them a little less on the return on investment.
Do you really think he's taking less than 30?
I'm not saying that he's going to take less than that. I think he might be. You never know. A year ago, he would have been probably forced to. This year, with teams that are probably still going to be willing to, and the markets of teams that are going to be interested in this, he's going to get offers that are probably going to be at least at 30.
Yeah. Would you sign him for this deal?
The deal that's currently on the table,
I would. 156, 26 a year? I would be out. I certainly understand where you're coming from, and I think that you would probably have the support of the city on your side. I think if we just did a Twitter poll right now, would you sign Alex Bregman? That sounds like a good idea. Would you sign Alex Bregman to a six-year, $156 million deal? I think you would probably – like, what percentage of people you think – let's do that. We'll report back tomorrow. What percent of people on my Twitter followers will say yes?
65%.
Okay. I'm going to take the over on that. I'll take 66%. Brian, you want to get in on the fun? Already prices righted them, so.
Which you normally do.
Oh, sorry. You repeat the question I was podcasting.
So I'm going to put it out a Twitter poll during the next break, and we're going to report back tomorrow. What percentage of people would say that they would like Alex Bregman back on a six-year, $156 million deal?
Oh, I think Astros Twitter is almost all pay the guy when it comes to these things. So I'll say it's like 75%.
Man, it's a bad game theory there. He should have prices righted me. Yep. Yeah, he should have prices righted me. Now, I wouldn't do it. I do think he's a declining player. 6 years is a little too long. $26 million. I don't think his production will live up to the $156 million. There's also some other rumors out there. Brian McTaggart reporting that the Astros are interested on Christian Walker. Mm-hmm. That, to me, sounds like a backup plan in case they don't sign Alex Bregman, which I like the idea of Christian Walker in Houston. Now, he does come with a compensation pick, so you would lose a draft pick. And he's also a first baseman.
And he's not younger, so you have same concerns about decline.
Because I don't think it'd be a six-year deal. I think it'd be a 2 to 3 year deal on Christian Walker.
I think it would be – I've heard they would like to keep it at a 3 year deal, but if they got a 3 year deal out of Christian Walker, what do they do at third base?
Probably a battle in camp between DeZinzo, Bryce Matthews, or there's been rumors that their backup plan at third is Jorge Polanco.
Yeah, because they're not going to afford Adamas. Adamas is going to get very similar. The projections out of Adamas were 6 and 150.
Yeah, you're not. I think there's a possibility for them to sign one big fish, and like in that big fish tier, I would have Bregman. I'd have Adamas. I would even have Walker, even though that'd be on a shorter term deal. I could see them signing Walker to play first, Polanco to play third. I could see that scenario.
I don't like the third base aspect of
Polanco
it.
Polanco was not good last year. Now, he was coming off his knee surgery, and he was better in the second half than the first half.
Some pop against the Astros.
Yeah, he's got some pop. I don't hate Jorge Polanco as a plan B. I don't think he's as good as Bregman, obviously. But if they get priced out on Bregman, I don't hate Polanco on a short-term bridge.
Would you rather have Christian Walker at first base or Willie Adamas at third base?
Well, I mean, it's a very different question because Adamas is going to make a lot more money.
Well, but if
than
you're
Christian
saying
Walker,
they're going to only, well, but if I'm saying if you're only going to go,
I'd rather have Adamas
one fish. I would too, because 6 and 150 for Adamas, I could deal with that.
See, I think he makes more than that. I think he's going to get more than 6 for 150.
That was projections I saw this morning.
Yeah, I think he gets more than 6 for 150. But I think Adamas is a better player.
He's a little younger,
Christian Walker. Yeah, much younger. He's a year younger than Bregman.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's younger than Bregman, so.
Well, I thought you meant versus Walker.
No. I'm saying if you want Adamas at third base versus Bregman, you can start weighing all the age, the numbers, offensively, the defensive abilities, things like that. He had more pop and more home runs than Bregman. I think Bregman's a better defender because he's playing at third base.
Bregman's, I think their OPS was like the exact same. OPS plus was like the exact same. I think Bregman's still a slightly better player than Adamas. I don't think it's a crazy difference, though. I would personally. Like, whichever one you could get cheaper would be my answer.
See,
but they both might be priced out of my range.
I would look third base before I'd look at first base because I think that the platoon option you had first base late in the season, especially if we would like to see, I think you and I personally would like to see Yiner play more first base.
Yeah.
But if Yiner's playing more first base, you have a way to solve the first base problem a little bit easier than worrying about if you can get someone already on in your system and on your roster to play third base or find someone cheaply. I just that worries me.
The problem, though, is that it's such a huge difference in terms of their contract.
Yep.
Like the athletic projection on Adamas is 6 years, $150 million. The athletic projection on Christian Walker is 2 years, $44 million. So, I mean, that's a $100 million difference.
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as which guy's the better player. It's Adamas on a 6-year, $150 million deal or Christian Walker at 2 for 44.
Yeah, no, mine was just like from position, which one would you rather do? And then from the standpoint of, I know you just said if you're only going to go out and get one fish in the market, you know, obviously less years and so less money for the long term on the Walker deal, but which guy would you rather have? That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I mean, if money was not an object, I'd go Adamas, but like money is an object, obviously. I think I might change my answer because I think you could get Walker and Polanco and then maybe an arm at the cost of one Willie Adamas.
Isn't that kind of like bringing back to the Josh Hader conversation last year? Like, okay, you went out and made the big splash on the biggest guy at that position, but you could have taken that money and spread it out to 3 or 4 guys.
I think they screwed up the Hader contract.
It feels like it's a similar conversation.
I personally like Josh Hader, and I know he didn't have a great year in year one. I like Josh Hader. I don't like the signing of Josh Hader.
Right, because you could have spread the money out. I think that's kind of the same conversation as compared to Willie
Adamas.
You know, don't sign Willie Adamas because you could get Christian Walker plus, you know, something else and then a bullpen arm, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Even this year, when you're talking about, like, the biggest fish on the market in Soto, they're saying if you're the Yankees.
Like $600 million.
Yeah, well, more than that, but I'm saying there's teams that want, and Yankees want Soto back, obviously. But their plan B, they said, if they don't get Soto and he signs somewhere else, is Christian Walker, the pitcher from the Orioles.
Oh, Corbin Burns.
Corbin Burns, Christian Walker, and possibly Alex Bregman, the third baseman. You had those three players as opposed to Soto. Yeah, you should want that.
Yeah.
But, of course, the big splashiness is you got to have Soto back in New York. You got to have Soto because he's the biggest fish. That's kind of like to the Hader conversation.
Yeah. The Astros are also interested, according to Bruce Levine from The Score in Chicago. He says that the Astros have called on Cody Bellinger.
Huh.
I don't hate the idea of Cody Bellinger. Now, he does make a lot of money, so there are some finances that would need to be figured out there that I think are possible, but I'm going to save them for the show tomorrow. Cody Bellinger is an interesting option because I think you could play him at two different positions depending on who's pitching against you.
You absolutely could.
Because I think you could play him at first base against lefties and allow John Singleton to platoon with him, kind of frankly. So, okay, let me restate that. So if you trade for Cody Bellinger, he would be a first baseman and center fielder for me. Against lefties, I would have him play first base, and I would start Jake Myers in center and Chaz McCormick in left field. And against righties, I would start him in center field, move Chaz to left, and play John Singleton at first.
And I think that you're a better ball club for doing that.
I think so.
I think that, and again, when you start thinking about the reasons why you say no to Cody Bellinger because of the past history, if Bregman does walk out the door, that's basically, aside from Altuve, the last possible point of resistance for guys that wouldn't want Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
Lance, I would need to ask. Never there.
I would have to ask.
Altuve is basically the only guy left. Well, Verlander is going to be out the door.
I don't know. I think Verlander is. I think there's a chance he's back.
Maybe.
I think he.
On
I think
a cheap contract.
Yeah, 1 year or $10 million, right. Something like that. I would call Altuve, and I would. I might even call Lance. I know I make fun of Lance McCullers, not Zerline. I know I make fun of McCullers and never pitching, but I would call Altuve and McCullers and see where they're at on that before I do something.
Yeah, because I think they would also have their finger on the pulse of the player.
Yeah, I would definitely make that call to them before I make that trade. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Blankers has a question about the window closing in the golden era for you. We'll talk about it next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Now back to the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers has a question about the golden era and the window closing. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Brian in Bel Air wants to talk about Bellinger. Let's look at that alliteration. With the Killer Bees. What's up, Brian? You're in the Hive.
Hey, guys. I've literally never called into a radio show, but right before you went to the break, you said, considering Bellinger, you know, if Bregman's gone, then Altuve's the last one left that might have a problem with bringing on someone like Bellinger. And my immediate gut reaction was, what about me? And then I start thinking about, what about the other tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of fans that also have a say in this? Like, does nobody hold grudges anymore? I've talked about this with my kids a lot, teaching them about just the whole Astros run these last 6 or 8 years. And as free agency happens, all of this gets homogenized and people move around and it all seems to go away. But it doesn't go away for me. It doesn't go away for the diehard Astros fans that have had to stick up for our team. I've got friends in lots of other states and countries, and we like to battle and talk about our team versus their team and all these sorts of things. And I'm like, does nobody hold grudges anymore? Why is this okay that someone like Bellinger could come in here and sign a decent deal? Maybe it's a good value. But how can we ever go to a game and root for him ever again as a true Astros fan?
Well, I think that, and Brian, I appreciate the call. I think the thing is that you forget the fact that, as a fan, I understand the passion that's there, and that's what you're supposed to have. But I don't think the organization, yeah, they might think about it, but the organization has made moves in the past, too, where they're going to make a move, and they know it might not be popular with the fans. If it's okay, if the team's okay with it, and they feel like it's going to make the team better and it's in the best interest of the team, they're going to make the moves that are going to improve this baseball team regardless of how the fans think. And yes, there's always going to be a discussion about the finances if they think it's going to truly affect ticket sales. But I believe that what they've seen and how they've seen the loyalty of this team, winning cures everything. And as this team, as long as it's been winning, has drawn unbelievable fan support, and they're still going to do what they're going to do. What's the closer from Toronto that had all the problems that
Osuna.
I mean, Roberto Osuna was as controversial as it gets at the time, and they made that move.
Made that move. There's a lot.
They did, but at the same time, as an organization, Crane was behind supporting.
Supported Luno in it, but yeah. If Luno wasn't the general manager, I don't think Roberto Osuna is ever an Astro. I really don't think there's another general manager in Astro history that makes that trade.
Maybe not because of all the things that was following around Osuna.
All of that, yes.
Yeah. But I believe Crane showed a willingness to support it enough to go through with it and make the move to where the point I'm making is I understand that the fans feel like their say-so matters, but at the end of the day, I think that they're going to make – if they feel like Cody Bellinger makes them a better baseball team and what we just laid out for you and playing two different positions to help this ball club, I just – I honestly think that they're going to make that move if they feel like that's how they see Cody Bellinger.
Do you think Trevor Bauer could help this baseball team?
Trevor Bauer. You think that Osuna had?
Well, that's my point. To me, it's case by case. Like there are certain lines that you're willing to cross to help your team. There are others that you are not. What Bellinger said was words. Like Cody Bellinger said a bunch of words in the immediate aftermath of that. I think it's a great call, Brian. Appreciate the call. I think it's a great take. And yeah, we didn't bring up the fan perspective of it, but he also asked the question like, how would we ever root for him? Well, if he hits 40 home runs and leads you to a World Series, I think there'd be a lot of screaming fans at Minute Maid Park sure that would. Are rooting for him. Remember, and look, this isn't quite the same thing, but I mean, Bellinger never said anything more than words, right? He said that the Astros cheaters, like, you know, he insulted them, whatever. Carlos Beltran left the Astros, and it ticked off a lot of Astro fans, and every single time that Carlos Beltran would come back to Houston and play, they booed yep. him out of the stadium. Whenever he returned and he was helping the Astros and helping them win a World Series eventually, all of that fanfare returned for Carlos Beltran. So how would you root for him if he's really good? Now, if you trade for him and then he's awful, well, then he's going to be public enemy number one and a goat.
No doubt. Who's the worst guy that left recently? Gerrit Cole?
Yeah.
So if Gerrit Cole, you know, left the Yankees and decided he opted out, like he had then opted back in, but if he opted out this offseason and decided, I want to go back to Houston and play for the Astros, as much as fans rightfully booed his ass every time they've gotten close to him since, you don't think that they'd welcome him back and they'd cheer for him if he was the same Gerrit Cole? I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's if he was awful, no, they would boo him.
No, of course.
So, like, context matters here. But, yeah, I mean, I think Brian's point is a fair one. I personally don't care a whole lot about words.
Or feelings.
Like, yeah, I really don't. Like, I mean, if you're not doing anything that misrepresents my organization, like in the Bauer case, I wasn't a fan of the Osuna trade. Like those are where I'm going to draw the line. But in terms of Bellinger saying mean things about the Astros and their players now 7 years ago, and if Altuve's okay with it, then I'm okay with it.
There's a pretty high sample size of players that had mean things to say or negative things to say when that was all going down. You can't hold a grudge against all of them.
Texter, the caller's teaching his kids to hold grudges. I did notice that. Another texter, I literally set out the Osuna year. Bad word, Osuna, never Trevor Bauer. I'm with that. Let's be real. Nothing is going to happen, and Dana Brown will come out and tell us how we have a winning ball club as we are. I disagree. Astros will be active in free agency in some form or fashion. They might not be spending tons of money, but they'll make some moves.
And also maybe because Alex Bregman goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
On top of that, yeah.
People don't hold grudges. At the end of the day, it's business. There's a select few who will never be Astros, but I would 100% root for him if he hits 40 tanks. And if he hit four, you would boo him out of Minute Maid Park. Yep. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Corey, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Corey?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to go against what Brian just said. I mean, this is a business, and business is winning. So I agree 100% with what you are saying. If Bellinger comes in as a superstar, I mean, how are you not going to root for the guy? And also on Altuve comment, maybe outside of this organization that people don't know, but Altuve is probably one of the most likable guys in the league between the players. Obviously, during the cheating scandal, everybody was upset and saying mean things. I mean, that's just the world we live in. But to say that we wouldn't want a guy to make our team better, I feel like is wrong.
For the most part, yeah. Unless, I mean, the guy has a history of, like, beating women, then you don't want to employ that guy. But, yeah, for the most part, if he helped you win and he's the most heinous thing he ever did was say, oh, the Astros cheated, especially when it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, Trevor Bauer, to me, is I'm with you. It's so totally different in the fact that he just seems to be so just vulgar and for lack of better terms, with everything that has been shined a light on, whether he was convicted of anything or not. We've talked about whether he'd find his place back in Major League Baseball at all. I think that's a major difference from a guy that just basically said what a lot of people were saying at the time, which is the Astros cheated.
Yeah. Would you trade Lance McCullers for Cody Bellinger?
Hell yeah, I would.
Someone asked me that on Twitter the other day. I was like, that's a good question. Because part of the reason Chicago wants to trade Bellinger is because they want to save money and they don't feel like he's worth the contract he's going to get. Now, you add additional years if you're actually, I mean, Bellinger actually has a player option for next year as well. So maybe you're not even adding an additional year because Lance McCullers' contract's up, I believe, after 2026. Yeah. So you could actually be saving money. So the Cubs' desire to trade this is that it is cost-cutting by a few million dollars. Not a ton, but a few million. Probably I think he's making 25, Bellinger.
I think 27 in that range.
And then Lance is, what, 17, 18? 17. So let's just call it let's call it $10 million. So the Cubs would save $10 million a year. They would unload Cody Bellinger. They get the idea of potentially a starting pitcher that could return that actually has a higher upside. The Astros get rid of a pitcher who hasn't pitched in the last 2 years, and they add a guy who's an immediate starter at either first or center field.
I'm in.
You're in. You're totally. How do you feel, Brian? Lance McCullers for Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, I'll totally side with that. Right, you can't rely on Lance.
Look at us. General Manager Killer Bees. Better than the original Killer Bees that are running the Astros organization. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Sorry, Blaine. We'll get to your question tomorrow.
That's okay? No, fine. I know. And I was going to ask.
Yo, Blaine, man.
What about, would you trade Presley right now for a third baseman?
I don't know if, we have a fundamental disagreement with his value.
What level of third baseman could you get?
I saw Nightingale was on a different radio show the other night and said that the
radio Presley. Show,
it's a friend of mine.
Are you cheating on us?
No. What was the deal?
It was.
Were you in the area of 45?
Alec Baum for Presley.
That ain't getting it done.
Well, I mean, you might have to bring sweeteners to the table, but at the same time, if I could, they want to get rid of Baum.
They want a return for him, though.
They need a closer.
Brian Presley's not a closer in Major League Baseball anymore. He's not. He's a mid reliever nowadays.
At $14 million a year for one more year, I think.
Aroldis Chapman just got 10, and he's better than Presley.
Okay.
I'm not sure Ryan Presley has positive trade value. I think he has negative trade value.
We'll see.
Yeah. We will.
Because, if they could make that deal, I'd make that deal.
100%. Yeah. I would do that in all.
If I got to give up some prospects, okay. But I'm liking that deal.
Yeah, I would. I'm in favor of that. I think he's a good hitter. Wichita's finest. All right, car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. Ah! I'll give you a f***ing bone, you prick. Where's my f***ing money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
What are you nominating for car wreck of the day? 713-780-ESPN. Blankers, what you got?
I got the Lakers last night. The Lakers last night, after they got off to a decent start, losing by 40 to the Heat. At times having video with all five guys basically quitting and getting back in transition. And LeBron, who finally had a good game because they were wondering if he had anything left in the tank, ended an 0-for-20 streak from three-point range. Not a good look. And then LeBron barking at Anthony Davis during a timeout where it seems like even those two guys that have always been tight. JJ's got his hands full in L.A.
Yeah, they're a mess. they're a mess. And I think LeBron's... I don't want to say he's quit, but I think LeBron sees the writing on the wall, and I really think that LeBron was trying to get to the finish line of playing in an NBA game with his son. And now that that's happened,
I think that's probably true.
I think a lot of his desire is done.
Are you guys saying that he's washed?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
he had a streak of what? Like,
oh yeah.
He had like 3-4 triple doubles earlier this season.
Look,
it's not
he
like
still
he's
has ability better than a lot of guys in this league. There's no question about that, but. The fact that he's over 40 and he's playing way more minutes than I think he expected to be playing at this point in his career, I think it's all taking a toll on him, and I think Jeremy's right. Once he got that last milestone up, he's not going to catch Michael for championships. So
no, I think he's still a good player. Yeah. I just don't think he's the best player on like a top five team in the Western Conference.
That's fair.
Like he still obviously can play. But is he going to lead the Lakers to the promised land? No. I don't even think he's going to lead them to the playoffs. I want to nominate people buying celebrity meme coins and thinking it's going to make them money. People bought these Hawk Tua Girl meme coins, and they're losing all their money.
Apparently, people want to throw her in jail over it.
How stupid do you have to be to buy this?
How stupid do you have to take advice from Hawk Tua Girl?
Very, very dumb.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she's very lucrative. She's making good business decisions. All right, what do you got, Brian?
The Texas Longhorns investigation of who was throwing bottles on the field yielded zero people being identified. So well done to the Texas investigators and hook them.
Yeah, you celebrate that.
Yeah, get
you
the bottles ready for
that.
Saturday, guys.
Yeah,
get the bottles ready for
there.
Saturday.
King of Twitch nominates us for saving Crane money and then Bear Brother for bad knees. All right, what's winning? Let's go, LeBron. You're the winner. All right, LeBron, congratulations. He's Brian. Good hard work. You. All right, he's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston, ESPN National, right now on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.